Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Jessica Williams. She's one of the greatest pianists in jazz today, and she truly dignifies the art of jazz, playing with intelligence and taste. And with every album, her legend grows. You know, you're sort of a legend because you've been around for a while, Jessica, and yet you don't appear in the sort of in the obvious places in the middle of New York or... You know, we hear about you, but where have you been playing mostly lately?
Well, you know, that's the thing. Not having gone to New York, my visibility was somewhat less than wonderful. So I was in the Bay Area for about 10 years, and I lived in Sacramento for 3 years. And
it's funny, I remember that period because you and I talked on the phone about doing piano jazz, but I've known you since before that. Where were you before Sacramento?
Let's see, well, I was Oakland, California, San Francisco. I came up to Seattle. I went up to Seattle for a little while, 10 years back. And then before that, I was on the East Coast. That's where I grew up. I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland, and then I spent about 7 years in Philadelphia, and I came out to San Francisco when I was 28.
Well, you're really sort of a nomad in a way.
I'm looking for the quality of life thing, combined with the ability to work and get people involved in the music.
God, though, that's a great goal, because aren't we all? I mean, I would think, though, having visited Seattle, that the quality of life there, when you think of environmentally and climate and the people, that it's a very nice place. But as far as being able to work all the time, maybe that's
The way most musicians in Seattle have dealt with that is to teach at either Cornish State College or Washington State U. And there are some good musicians up there. Julian Priester is living up there, a great musician, saxophone player. Jay Thomas is up there. He used to be with Slim Gaylor.
Oh, really?
And there's some wonderful musicians, but they're all teaching. That's something that I've avoided up to this point. And now I'm starting to think, and I think it's because I'm getting older, that perhaps teaching is something I should really look at, because I think it's important that the younger generation become educated about this music. I'm starting to think that it might be a moral imperative for me to teach. And I think as I grow older and my social concerns become more to the surface, because they've always been there, but I think they're now becoming a little more mature and perhaps a little more verbal.
Before we go any further, you know, this is a great conversation.
But we're not going to have any time to play.
But you've got to play something, because just the act of playing is going to turn so many people on that either know you already or haven't heard you yet, that I think it's going to be a great experience all the way around. So what's this going to be, Jessica?
This is something nobody plays anymore. I learned it from Yusef Lateef on an old Yusef Lateef record. This is... So if it's wrong, you have to blame Yusef Lateef. It's called Why Do I Love You?
I love that, too.
And do we know who wrote this?
No.
I believe it was...
If you know, please tell me.
I'll take a stab and say Rodgers and Hart. I believe that's right.
You might be right.
I think so.
The harmony, I guess the only word I can think of for some of that is very humorous and sort of wry harmony there a couple of times. It's wonderful. I mean, but now some of your influences must have been, what, Tatum? Must have been. think?
Well, I certainly listened to Tatum. Somebody gave me those 13 record masterpiece series. You remember that?
Oh, sure.
I devoured that. I think that I was going to say two, but there's more. Probably the major influences would be, for me, Thelonious Monk, I think, definitely.
That I know, yes.
Coltrane, Sonny Rollins is very important to me, particularly in the playing that I know is Lenny Tristano based, with the bass line in the left hand and the single note horn line in the right hand. The approach that I take a lot of times is the way Sonny would do it in a piano-less trio setting. And the things that I get from Sonny, or at least I got when I was growing up, are the incredible sense of humor and the contrapuntal playing, sometimes not always in time, out of time,
mm-hmm.
and the amazing things that he did with space and time, compressing time, like playing a melody in a 32-bar form, playing the melody in the first 14 bars and then letting the rest of the tune just have its big space in it. That blew my mind.
Didn't you do something of that then?
I did have...
I guess truncated is a good word. Truncated a couple of bars mm-hmm. there, you know. But, I mean, it all was a part and parcel of the tune.
You could have the quarter notes going, which would be... or you could have the 16th notes going. But then there's also that thing in between that I kind of like.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. But see, to do that, you've got to have terrific technique. Now, were you born with that, or did you go to school, or to Peabody?
I went to Peabody. Sure, you've heard that. And
take classical music.
That was classical music, and. I made it up to Rachmaninoff, and then I discovered jazz. The first jazz I heard was Dave Brubeck playing Take Five, and I was 13 years old.
Well, now, did you start playing jobs around in Baltimore? Is that where you got started playing professionally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 15 years old. And the thing that happened was, I don't know if you're familiar with one of the quirks of the East Coast, is that if you're a pianist, you almost have to learn how to play Hammond B3 organ, so that's what I had to do. And I wound up playing in organ trios.
Oh, now that I didn't know. See, my first knowledge of you was this record on a label. I think it was like a local label, and it was called the Portal
of Antrim, right?
Antrim,
and nobody knows what that means. And
I don't know
beside
either.
The point at this
it
stage.
It was such an interesting title. And here's a picture of this blonde girl with long blonde hair floating down her back, and you know, I put the record on, and wow, you know, who's this?
Uh-huh.
And I have all those things that you made on.
I haven't heard that record for years.
Clean cuts. I don't know what happened to that label, but anyway, I have
they
a lot
are still
of those
there
things.
Actually,
and. So anyway, I mean, it's hard enough. I mean, did you just break in or know all the musicians in town so that you could?
Well, what happened, I was 27, 28 years old, and there was a rock session going on at a local studio, and I just snuck in and played the piano on the break, and the producer heard me and said, hey, this is maybe I'll make a record with this woman, you know, and I got a chance to make a record. And I was very lucky because they paid for everything, and I stayed with them for five records.
What's that?
They made
what
five
label
records.
Was it? What was that called?
Originally, the label was called Adelphi.
That's
and
right.
Then it was and changed to Clean Cuts.
Yeah.
But I see those first three records that I made as a period of searching, not knowing what I wanted to say, kind of an identity, if not crisis, at least a process.
Searching for.
Yeah, for the identity.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Because I was listening to Chick Corea and Cecil Taylor, and they both come out on those first records. I mean, that's an interesting combination, Chick Corea and Cecil Taylor.
I think they might come out on Things You're Doing Now, which would why don't you play another piece and let's see who pops out besides Jessica, because it's mostly you.
Well, I think it's just now at this point, at this age, that I'm starting to assimilate my influences. What do you want to hear, Marian?
I want to hear another standard tune. You pick good tunes. Getting Sentimental Over You. How's that?
Okay, that's good.
What I need to know is, do you just sit there and improvise this, or do you have sort of a little bit of an idea about how you're going to do it?
Well, what happens with me is I generally take a tune and try to make it mine. I think most jazz musicians worth their salt do that. And then I find something that works, and I generally repeat that if it works. If it works, do it. You know, so when I did that D minor thing, on the minor introduction to that tune.
Like a pedal.
Yeah, pedal point.
Point, yes.
Not at all do I do that all the time. No way. But I approach the tune different ways at different times. But at that particular, I've done that before. I mean, that's not something that just popped up on this particular
but
show.
But you may not have done it that way before. I don't think you ever really.
No, I never did it exactly that way. I think the last time I did that little minor excursion was probably a year ago. I don't think I've done that recently. Everybody wants to play that tune, winds up playing it pretty straight, you know.
Yeah.
But I was really moved by the Thelonious Monk version, and you can hear that in there also.
You are definitely a great fan of Monk, a student of Monk's music, aren't you?
I think it's because, partially because of his sense of humor, because there's such depth to his music. I think all jazz musicians probably have a namesake somewhere down the road, and he seems to be mine. And because there's a certain, and I don't want to use the word novelty derogatorily. I want to use it in the sense that he brings a certain novelty to whatever he plays. He's a novel approach. You know?
Well, when you think of some of these tunes, like Little Rooty Tooty.
Little Rooty Tooty. This Old Man.
And the title.
The Japanese folk song.
Yeah, not only the titles, but little quirky things that he would stick in there. I mean, well, he did have a great sense of humor. But then on the other hand, when you think how he could write such a beautiful melody as Round Midnight, Ruby, My Dear. I mean, he just went from one extreme to the other. He just had the whole thing covered. Let's do it. We might as well do a Monk tune. You picked out one that I haven't played, but I know it. And I'd love to hear you play it. Or we can do it together.
Okay, let's
Mysterioso.
Do it together.
Okay.
Okay. You take the first solo. Thank you.
hear the full broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station or visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. The digital archiving of this program was made possible in part by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior.